Hallo und herzlich willkommen zu der zweiten Starke Kost Staffel. In dieser Staffel spreche ich mit Menschen aus verschiedenen Ländern über die Folgen der Klimakrise in ihren Herkunftsstaaten. Wie verändert sich die Umwelt, die Landwirtschaft, die Arbeitssituation und nicht zuletzt auch die Ernährung in Ländern des globalen Südens? Was sind die politischen Maßnahmen, die dem entgegenwirken können? Und was können wir hier vor Ort vielleicht auch tun? In der fünften Folge der zweiten Staffel von Starke Kost spricht Lucy über Ungleichheiten, die durch die Folgen des Klimawandels in ihrer Heimat Kenia verstärkt werden. Als Doktorandin der Sozialwissenschaften an der Uni Bremen untersucht sie Reaktionen auf die Klimakrise. Ein zentrales Thema ihrer Forschung ist die Arbeitssituation von Frauen in Kenia, die besonders stark von den Folgen der Erderwärmung betroffen sind. Außerdem spricht sie über Klimaresilienz und die nicht wirtschaftlichen Verluste, die durch den Klimawandel entstehen. Als Klimagesicht berichtet sie auch in Deutschland von ihren Forschungsergebnissen. Mit dabei ist auch Yara von der Deutschen Klimastiftung in Bremen. Sie arbeitet im Projekt Klimagesichter und stellt uns das Projekt genauer vor. Das Gespräch haben wir auf Englisch aufgenommen. Jetzt erst einmal viel Spaß beim Hören. Welcome to a new episode of Globallokal. I am in Bremen again at the office of the Deutsche Klimastiftung. And I'm here with Lucy and Yara. Lucy, would you like to introduce yourself?
Thank you for having me. My name is Lucy and I am a PhD student at the University of Bremen. I am a social science researcher and I study about climate change responses.
So we have a category on our podcast, which is explain to your 10-year-old self what you do and why. Lucy, do you want to start?
My work involves taking care of the environment because at the moment, the environment is undergoing some threats or some changes due to impacts of climate. And basically, I see what we can do to keep the environment safe. So my work as a social scientist is all about environment issues.
Yara?
Yes, in the project, Klimagesichter, or in English, climate exchange. We work a lot on the issue of climate justice. And because for my 10-year-old self, it would not be easy to understand what climate justice means. It means that there are some countries in the world that they have, had a lot of CO2 emissions and contributed a lot to the current climate crisis. And there's, quite a lot more countries that have had little CO2 emissions, and that's why they didn't contribute to the crisis, but they are still, because of several issues, very affected by climate change. And one of the issues that we highlight in the project is that there's always the poorer population more affected by the crisis, because they have less means to support themselves and the governments have less means to support them due to the global economic system. And that's why we have people like Lucy who research in this area or work in this area to speak about climate change in their country, just to raise awareness in Germany.
Lucy, I saw you were nodding all the time. And what is your point of view on climate justice? And does it play a role also in your research?
Definitely, climate justice plays a big role in my research, because from the findings on what I found out on my fieldwork is that we are speaking about climate action. There is much emphasis on being carbon neutral. But then again, for this aspect of climate justice is what is really important for people to take action in the global south. It's the factor that makes a difference on how severe people experience different impacts of climate change. At times, there is drought and reduced farm harvests, but food scarcity in households is different because of different social economic conditions. So there could be a drought in my country and some people might not even realize there is food scarcity. And for others, it could be an issue of food scarcity. So climate justice is very, very important to enable people respond to climate issues.
Do you have more examples in terms of like what are the impact of climate crisis on your region?
Yes, I was in my country in April of this year, and there was a lot of rain that resulted into flooding, and the roads were impassable. We could not use the roads, and there was also information for people to stay off the roads, for people not to move in different places because it was dangerous. But then again, there was a picture that was shared, a video that was shared on social media of a lorry. That's a big truck. You understand a lorry?
Ja, in Deutsch ist das ein LKW, der normalerweise Sand für Baustellen transportiert.
Yeah. Trying to pass through a flooded bridge over a river, and it was trying to take people across. And when it was going through this bridge, it was swept. It started drifting off the bridge and drifted until it fell in the water with all these people. And there were all sorts of comments on social media about why the people boarded that lorry, despite the fact that there was communication. But many of these comments, I would say they were speaking from a point of privilege. The people who boarded that lorry, for some of them, they had no other option. If someone needs to get across the river to get food for his family, for his children, maybe they haven't, you tell him to stay behind. And this was, this flooding was something that was sudden. It wasn't planned. And for somebody who earns a daily wage, they have to go and earn their money.
So, but there was information by the government of Kenya, could provided information, and people just couldn't stop, like they had to go.
Yeah, they provided information, but that is why we speak about issues of social protection, because they have no other means. If you have children in your house, they are staring at you, and you are their parent, you are their mother, their father. They didn't have breakfast, they didn't have lunch. Would you stay behind? So we cannot just say that these people are disobedient or what. It's because they have not been given alternatives. So that's why climate action is an issue about climate justice. It has to be there as much as there is information. But we need to see how these vulnerable people are helped so that they can work out these issues. They get the information. They are aware of these dangers. But at times, it's impossible for them to follow solutions that are applicable to every other people. For the rich people, some of them, if they needed to travel, they will use aircraft. They will travel by air. But somebody who earns a daily wage and they need to report to that place to earn money so that they can feed their family, you'd not tell them to stay and starve to death in their homes with little children, wives, and so on. Yeah, that's why I agree with Yara that we need to have like programs for social protection. Yeah, so that and also work on equalities and many other things like everybody else in the country. Yeah, so that there is some form of equality, there is some form of financial well-being for people, so that they can be able to take refuge or to stop for a minute with their lives whenever we have these devastating impacts of climate change. For other people, if you tell them not to go outside, not to pass a certain road, it doesn't make a difference because they would starve to death where they are. Women do different kinds of jobs from men in the setting that I researched on in the coastal areas. For those involved in tourism, their work is usually situated on the shorelines. And they are, at the moment, the rising water levels are now pushing them far away from these coasts. So the rising waters are pushing them outside their prime trading positions. They can no longer trade. So they're losing an income already. And when I spoke with them, most of them, they would speak about their children. And you find that they have lots of dependence. So once a woman is affected, it's like an entire household is affected on different aspects. Yeah.
Is there like one story or one woman which like you think about a lot?
There are two, because now when you speak about women, you just have to see them with all their connections. So I spoke with one woman and also spoke with her daughter who were doing the same job. And now this woman was complaining and she was saying, now we have no future because my children are here. My grandchildren are also here, but the ocean is taking away the place that we used to do our business from. And I see that we are also crowded. So I'm thinking of resigning, of stopping. Very times they stay outside work because now they are pushed away from their trading area. Some form of despair from this elderly woman whom I spoke with, and also with her daughter whom I spoke with later on.
And there are no alternatives?
They don't have enough resources. And a problematic issue is that when you are in informal kind of work, at times you miss out recognition from even with the bigger businesses or what is already established there. Yeah.
What do you wish for your research can change?
I would wish that we have climate resilient livelihoods for all these people, because climate change is here. And resilience will come when we work on carbon neutrality, and also when we work on social justice issues. Yeah, that's when we will achieve resilience for these livelihoods. Yeah, I guess Germany already has made some commitments to this Warsaw mechanism for loss and damage. Mm-hmm. That is one way through which the EU and other developing nations can support these countries, and also
let me just explain. So the UN UNFCCC has implemented already in the not the last COP, but the COP before, they have implemented this the fund that supports especially communities and people who are very affected by climate change.
Yeah.
So it's called the Loss and Damage Fund. And even in the last COP, they were able to actually give some funds to the fund. But the problem is it's still voluntary. So not all countries participate, but Germany, as you said, is one of the donors to this fund. But it's still not enough. The guessing, there's a lot of guessing of how big of a fund we need to support all the communities affected. And what we have currently in the fund is not enough.
Yeah,
I think it's like way less, right?
Way less. Yeah.
Yeah, and again, the issue for the EU and Germany, I'm happy that even this loss and damage fund recognizes that there are non-economic losses. So part of the losses that are incurred by women, part of women's vulnerabilities, they have loss of vulnerabilities through non-economic losses and damage, which need to be captured also.
Can you give examples of non-economic losses, what they experience?
Yeah, in the area that I study, they have their own ways of preparing food, how it's affecting some of those ingredients. So the food doesn't have the same taste with it.
And the same nutrition as well.
Yeah, the same nutrition. And it goes a long way beyond the domestic household level, even to the level of food provisioning in hotels or restaurants. You see, when you visit a region, when a touristic region, for example, you go to Italy, there's a region you get the food from that area. So you can imagine if that food from that area can no longer be provided because these ingredients are being wiped away. So that is something that it's non-economic. It's applicable in many, many regions beyond Africa. But besides that, there are many other peculiar non-economic losses that need to be recognize. And I think that is where research should pay attention to now, for researchers to try work with communities, identify what are these losses that you have, and if there are others that are non-economic losses, yeah, so that they are documented well and they can be used for deliberation, how compensation can the fund without having the entire scope of what losses mm-hmm. are there. We might really overlook some critical groups of people who are affected, but just because they're not in big businesses to suffer economic losses. Yeah.
Yes, that's definitely true. And that's also something that I didn't think of before. So thank you for bringing that up. I think there's a lot of, like usually when you give funds to someone, there's usually the connection of this person has lost XYZ amount because of climate change. But obviously we need to think beyond it and also see also the cultural losses that people experience, as you mentioned also, nutritional and social losses.
Yeah, and I think the biggest at country level is these small island destinations like Tuvalu. Rising waters can consume the entire country. So there is loss of identity. How it's non-economic, but...
It is very important for the people.
And that is a very serious thing. Yeah.
Thank you for bringing up Tuvalu, because we in the German Climate Foundation, we have this exhibition, Dadali, coming up. And we actually have a person from Tuvalu speaking about... they call themselves a nation without country, because they are already this much affected, and it's already prognosed that the Tuvalu will drown. And they are looking into ways of how to resettle. But as you mentioned, the risks for a country that is drowning, or like in general, the risk due to climate change are much bigger, because it's already affecting them so much. And they will have to not only relocate, but also endure a lot of losses on the way until they are relocated.
Yeah. You mentioned groups that are not really seen by the government. Are there any like NGOs or other organizations that try to do like, to work in their favor or to make their voices more visible in Kenya?
Yeah, at the moment there is, but the main problem was the way institutions were set up not to be very representative. For example, you find in Kenya coasts, initially we had some local community organizing through beach management units, which were dominated by men initially. Now there is effort to include women in this organization. And because also that is the main contact for government, whenever it wants to reach out to community, it will go to this beach management units, which was not really representative of gender initially. But now they are trying to rectify that. And you'll also find NGOs, donor organizations, when they go somewhere, they will go to the usual.
To the what?
To the usual... the usual organization, like the beach management unit or the usual community.
Yeah, they always need like kind of like a, sometimes like a mayor or something, like someone that is the head of a community. And they always need this person to interact with the community on the ground.
Yeah.
And it does affect a lot the gender balance. I mean, because they're usually men in the patriarchy.
Yeah. So I think it's, anytime there is a cooperation, all these partners should put up conditions that we want you to comply with this, maybe representation in the community or these priority issues. You show how you work towards them. Yeah.
What motivates you in your work?
I just love what I'm doing. I love research. I love working on the environment. I love issues of environment protection.
Okay. How would a positive future in Kenya look like for you?
We'd have more of equality. We would have more of representation of women in decision making at all levels. Climate action for me is a priority for for everybody in the world to join for climate action. Because if we don't work on climate action, we continue to oppress the people who are affected in the global south.
Okay. So now we have the last question from this episode, which is a category. And that is, what is your favorite food or product from your region?
Wow. I love mangoes. I love fruit so much here. Yeah. But we have different types of mangoes. There is the small, tiny mango, which is very sweet, that I love it so much.
And you can't buy it here?
No, it's not here. I've not seen it here. Here we have the bigger ones.
Yeah, that's true. Or frozen.
Yeah, and it's very expensive. In my place, I get them free from the trees.
Oh, yeah. That's so cool.
They just drop like the apple is dropping outside here.
True, we have apples outside of the building.
Yeah.
That sounds really good. Okay, thanks a lot. And I wish you all the best.
Das war die 5. Folge der 2. Starke Kost Staffel. Danke an das Projekt Klimagesichter. Das Projekt wird von 2 Partnern geführt, der Deutschen Klimastiftung mit Sitz in Bremen und dem unabhängigen Institut für Umweltfragen mit Sitz in Berlin. Klimagesichter wird gefördert durch die Nationale Klimaschutzinitiative des Bundesministeriums für Wirtschaft und Klimaschutz. Abonniert uns gerne und folgt unserem Instagram-Kanal @eineweltmv. Dort posten wir auch Neuigkeiten zu unserem Podcast. Die nächste Folge der Staffel erscheint am nächsten Freitag, den 17. Januar. Euch alles Gute und bis nächste Woche.